Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Mina. I am delighted to have you today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I have been looking forward to this conversation. I think we're going to dive into a meaty topic that I think a lot of our listeners will be interested in. But before we do that, how about we just ask you to introduce yourself?
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me on your show. Of course. So let me talk about a little bit about myself. I am Mina Das. I am a fundraising analytics consultant with Campbell & Company. My day-to-day involves looking at data for all different nonprofits across the United States and a couple of pro bono projects in Canada. My work involves doing everything like capacity analysis for major gift donors or doing some kind of analytics work for planned giving, doing a lot of surveys. I'm involved also in database work and dashboarding. So basically, I have a complicated relationship with data. So that's how I have been involved in this work.
So, and is it in particularly in the nonprofit space and in fundraising? Am I picking up that correctly?
Yes, yes. So my clients are from all over arts and culture, food banks. Right now, because of the COVID times, we are more involved in the human services organizations. I'm also involved with a couple of pro bono work around DEIA with some organizations who are, starting to think around how to bring more of that aspect to their culture. These are a couple of things that right now my analytics work is focused on.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about today? How can we sort of tee up this conversation? I think this is a topic that I don't think that we're talking enough about how we incorporate sort of our analytic and prospect research sort of work, all the work that we're doing with data. I don't know that we're lining it up very well as it relates to this aspiration to be more diverse and inclusive and all those sorts of things. I don't think we're thinking about that very strategically. So how can you sort of tee up the conversation on that point?
Jason, it's really interesting. So I have been in the back end of this whole fundraising space. I'm not a frontline fundraiser. So my work always has been helping, the fundraisers with in their campaigns, whether it's a major gift campaign or it's a development assessment. It has never been on the front line. So the more these conversations around social justice, around community-centric fundraising started to happen, I realized that, you know, we cannot build something new just in silos. Like, a couple of things can be done in the front end and a couple of things can be done in the board meeting. It has to be all done together in a very strategic manner. And because the research tools and the research work I'm involved in is kind of the foundation work, you know, in my day-to-day projects, I feel like that's where I can bring in the most of my insights and my work into making it more inclusive and in making it more, you know, accessible to all the people.
Yeah, what does that conversation look? So if you were my client, so I work with a lot of organizations, and if they enlist you to come in and start having this sort of a conversation, what does that conversation look like from day one?
Well, you know, this is an excellent question. So this is where all my interest in projects, I know, outside of work has been, or my interest has been. So the way my work in the fundraising space so far, and it has been about, I would say, 3 years out of my whole 7-8 years of experience, is basically helping nonprofits with their campaigns. And that has been a very donor-centric idea. Like, you know, I start with the work, I get the data, I think about how to talk about their top prospects, who should be their top prospects. It starts with the overall data, and the idea just, you know, gets to a point where it's mostly about 6 or 7 figure gifts. And the conversations end up only on those big digit numbers. And that's starting to bother me now. So if you are an organization and if I come to you, I want to talk to you, how does your board members feel about all of this conversation of, you know, making things more beyond donor-centric conversations? B, how is your staff feeling? Because there is a disconnect between how the board members are feeling versus how the staff members are feeling. So point number 3, I want to talk to you about your research tools. How are you thinking about your fundraising beyond the conventional ways? Are you going to look at your top prospects, and are you going to take your surveys only of the people who you think have 6 million, you know, 6-digit or million plus capacities? So what I want to bring the idea into fundraising through my work is how to think beyond those conventional ways, how to be more inclusive of your, you know, entire donor pool. And one of the things that I feel this conversation is really important is because a lot of us in the field wants to talk about social impact. We cannot talk about impact until and unless we think of these whole, you know, this population in a more holistic way. So that's how I would begin a conversation if you are a nonprofit and I come to you and we start this topic.
So are you using the word, I'm not a big fan of the whole donor centrism sort of language. I'm not a fan of any of this sort of these ideologies mm-hmm. that don't tend to, I think sometimes we come up with concepts that are really just a organizational perspective of the donor, and we call it something. We call it donor centrism, for example, when in fact it's just like you're pointing out, it's really just focused on identifying the 6 and 7 figure donors. But can fundraising actually get to the place where we're going to put, in your mind and in the work that you do, can we actually get to the place where the work that we're doing is more, I like to think that it can be more virtuous, which is to say that that in some ways the fundraising goal can actually be put on the back burner, at least at the, you know, from the outset, in order to bring a more diverse pool of donors into the project.
You know, that's the question I keep asking with every time I bring out a piece in front of the world. That's that exact idea I keep asking. Is there a possibility of change? And believe me, every time the answer comes back to me, yes. It's going to be slow change. It's going to be small steps. It's not going to be drastic, dramatic, overnight change. But it is, I believe it is possible. You know, there is a change in the mindset of, you know, at least we are bringing up these questions. We are starting to acknowledge that a change is needed. And we are getting into that direction more. I would say that a couple of challenges in bringing this into reality, number one that I have seen with my clients, with my pro bono projects, is, you know, there is an existing disconnect between the leadership and between the staff members. I'm working with organizations whose staff members, you know, they want to make their work, whether it's frontline, whether it's back end, they want to make it more inclusive. But the leadership isn't ready yet. The question is going back to those same way of doing things like they were before. Think about the 6-digit plus gifts or the naming conventions, how to, you know, name the top donors. So a couple of changes here and there are happening, but how the biggest challenge for me is how do I bring through data a solution so there is more open dialogues between the staff members and the leadership. So this doesn't end up being just part of some of those meetings that happen annually. This can become something like part of their, you know, annual goals. So the whole idea of thinking about a diverse pool of donors doesn't come because it's something has to happen, right? It is more involved in because that is how my goals are. That is how my day-to-day is. So my work is more about bringing it into their day-to-day set of operations rather than thinking, oh, this is such a revolutionary idea, you know? Another challenge that I feel in this work, other than the disconnect between the leadership and the staff members, is most of these organizations have been doing fundraising in a certain way, especially when you are in campaigns. I have seen an inhibition in people in accepting these ideas of, you know, bringing more diversity when they are in campaigns. They start with the questions, you know, I have a goal to attain. How do I start? I think that comes with a bias in itself, that if you are bringing more diversity, if you are trying to be more inclusive, you are not going to hit your goal. And the second thing that I want to change through my work is that thinking, you know, fighting that bias.
Okay. So let's say, my whole career has been spent, and anybody who listens to the podcast knows that I have literally and figuratively spent my entire fundraising career at the lunch table with a donor. And I've never had any bias in particular. You know, my bosses did. My boards and bosses certainly did. They wanted to make sure that the person that I was sitting with could write a relatively generous check. But sometimes when I've had this conversation a number of times with a number of individuals, and I think you and I are definitely on the same page, but I guess some of the question that I continuously find myself wanting to ask the person who's advocating for that more diverse donor pool is, does the individual who's not currently represented in the donor pool now, do they want to be sitting at the lunch table with me solicited for a $50,000 gift? Do they want to be there, and do they feel like they're being overlooked, or are their priorities just simply somewhere else? Because we're asking them for money. I mean, if I take somebody to lunch, if you ensure that a donor is in my list, whoever they happen to be, I'm going to ask them for $50,000 if the assumption is that they're capable of doing that. And so I don't know. It almost sort of feels like we're saying that we can. That we're being discriminatory in some way towards the individuals who may not want to be asked for $50,000.
You put a very interesting point forward, Jason, and that's the kind of questions I want to address you when I was talking about the disconnect. So, let me just step back. And so, it doesn't sound, you know, for me, my experience is coming through, you know, all the conversations I've been having with the people on LinkedIn or social media or through my clients or my pro bono projects. Most of it is coming up because I feel like that disconnect is what I want to, you know, fulfill first. So if you want to bring a donor on the table and you want to ask for a gift of $50,000, my job in that whole process is to ensure to help you, number one, whether the donor is the right candidate or not for that gift. And it doesn't mean that I am suggesting that there could be biases, you know. But the idea is we need to make better segmentations in our donor pool. So from my work, when we work on campaigns, I help fundraisers of my clients to pick up people with whom they can ask 50,000 gifts, you know, going beyond six-digit plus gifts, who are the people they can go and ask for seven-digit gifts. What I want to propose is a solution where you don't look at the donors just like, you know, how much gift they can give, but you are kind of looking at them in a more thoughtful segmentation. So you may get a donor pool from me who you are not going to ask for a 50,000 gift, but how to engage them differently. So my idea to you, or, you know, when I'm working with you for a donor you want to bring on a lunch table would be more around, you know, you have 100 donors. I want to help you make good segmentations with which you know what to do with each donor pool in a way that they feel engaged at the end of the day with your mission, with your organization. The top 2% of that donor pool, and when I say top 2%, I don't mean to say going back to just the capacity or well screening or ratings, but top 2% that we can decide when, you know, I'm working with you, we can decide on the basis of on conversations, and we can create personalization at that top 2%. So this really thinking on what to do with the whole donor pool when you are not able to ask them for a 50,000 gift, or you, what do you want to do next with them? My idea is to bring them together and have them be more engaged with your mission. You know?
Okay. I have never asked this question, but I've been having this conversation with a number of my guests. But is fundraising, if one of the key things that we do in fundraising is this notion of segmentation? I've been hearing about segmentation for 25 years. Is segmentation just a nice way of basically being discriminatory? Are we basically saying we're going to isolate someone? So regardless of whether it's on income, you know, on their income capability, the color of their skin, their gender, whatever it happens to be, is segmentation essentially a discriminatory? But is that basically discriminatory?
You know, it's a very controversial question.
Hey, you wanted to come on the podcast.
Well, you know, I would say that the way I have seen it's been happening, the way the segmentations are happening, you are right. I personally feel it is, if not consciously bringing more divisions, you know, unpopular divisions, but somehow it is creating those, it's instilling those same ways of happening, things that have happened before. If we want to change, you know, if we want to bring a change, I really want to think about the people, how to do the segmentations and what to do next with the segmentations. I have seen doing segmentations and, you know, as part of my work with the clients, I have, you know, it was a need of the campaign that they had to do certain segmentations and then they had to focus on certain groups. Sometimes it's a legitimate, you know, story when the development staff is really 2 to 3 people, they don't have time, it's a campaign, you go for something. What I want to do is, you know, not make that segmentation in a way that there are actionable next steps on each of those groups. So let me give an example when I say this, you know, this idea. I'm doing these surveys for a lot of food banks and other human services organizations. And as you might already know, with COVID, there is a huge upsurge of new donors for food banks and other human services organizations. So what I have been doing in my surveys right now, especially now, is encouraging my clients to do an engagement survey with their donors, with their staff members, and bringing questions really like, you know, how is COVID affecting their philanthropic giving right now? How is COVID affecting their philanthropic giving in general to the sector? And I'm trying to do cross-tabbing and analysis at the back end to see that their, you know, giving histories and their overall engagement, not just about the giving history, and then cross-tabbing it, but like, you know, their behavior during COVID. And thinking really starting with affinity rather than capacity to see how can they be engaged more. How can I make it more actionable, not just to be making the donor pool inclusive, but also making it, you know, bite-sized for my development staff members who are going to pick those lists and take some next steps out of it. So I agree that the segmentation has been kind of a way to, I don't know, there is a scope. I feel like there is a scope for a team pool, and we can do that.
So at the beginning, so I'll pull back the curtain on my professional career and get you to comment on this. So I spent the first 5 or 6 years of my fundraising career working for faith-based organizations that spent a lot of money to get me trained, for example. And because they were faith-based organizations, they oftentimes seemingly wanted to imply that as a major gifts officer, it was my role to be at the lunch table with individuals who there was a prioritization of making the ask in person, but they always sort of wanted to also at the same time suggest that I should be willing to sit at the lunch table with somebody who can write me a check for $500 versus somebody who can write me a check for $500,000. And they never seemed to be very comfortable with sort of reconciling the sort of the inconsistency of what my metrics were, like go out and raise X number of dollars, but be willing to, in good conscience, sit and have lunch with somebody who can give you $500. And I just don't think when we talk about this subject, I just don't think that organizations are going to start taking people out to lunch for $500. I don't really.
No, you're right.
I just don't see it. And I mean, and I've said it, I presented to a group in Chicago not a year ago. And I said to them, I said, when the expectation comes to you because the economy tanks, and you have to take somebody out to lunch for $500 because somebody else is willing to do it, it's going to rattle your cage. But I think this discussion is should we even be willing to, should we be willing to or not be willing to? That $500 donor matters.
Yes, it absolutely does. And you bring such an important point right there with an example from your story. I agree with you. I don't think that, you know, a majority of the organizations you and I are working with are ready to take this idea. They are still questioning whether to, you know, think about that $500 gift and spending time with that donor or not.
Right.
And that exists.
But you know what? But I think the other thing that you and I know very well is, and this is what I say to my clients all the time. I say, if you will encourage the development officer, so the person actually sitting on the receiving side of that lunch table, if you will encourage them to sit down at the lunch table and solicit those $500 gifts, they'll actually enjoy their work more. It'll actually create a much more meaningful type of work. And it will prepare them for those moments when they can ask for that gift that's 100 times more. If we can sort of put the actual monetary goal on the back burner, figuratively and literally speaking, I need that fundraiser to just know how to sit at that lunch table and ask for something. I really don't care so much how much the ask is, because eventually that fundraiser is going to be sitting at a lunch table where the opportunity to ask for $500,000 is going to be there. And if they did enough of those $500 asks, I think they'll do perfectly fine.
I couldn't agree more. I was just thinking the moment you started saying this idea, this notion, I was considering, hey, wait, did I and Jason write my recent piece together? I didn't know that. No, you're right. This is what I mean by the disconnect and how I want to bridge it. My recent piece after you and I, you know, decided let's get on the podcast for bringing more, you know, DEI elements into research tools, my recent piece has been on measuring or bringing out a structured way for staff engagement. We always think about this donor engagement. I want to step back, pull back the organizations and start and let them have this dialogue, this conversation between the staff members, just like you said, where we could, you know, put the numbers a little behind and give them a chance to talk to those donors who can offer $500. I want to encourage such dialogues with a more, you know, data-centered approach that I'm offering through my piece, in which I am giving a staff engagement scoring mechanism. The idea of that scoring is to bring all these elements that, you know, motivates a staff member to give their best, to, you know, empower them, to encourage them, to give their in their job, and at the same time initiates a conversation with the board members, with the leadership, to start thinking how to bring these different elements from a $500 donor versus a $50,000 donor together in the same pool. The conversation has to be broadened. It has to grow, both for the staff members and for the donors.
See, right, and you and I definitely need to start doing some more talking and some more, maybe some more writing together, because I think that the crisis that we see, in fundraising is not that there's not enough $500 gifts or $50,000 or $500,000 gifts out there. I think it's that we don't have enough fundraisers who are willing and capable and encouraged to have those meaningful conversations that arrive at any of those outcomes. And so what ends up happening is that regardless of what the donor actually ends up giving to us, we're still relying on a very cheap, shallow form of engagement to begin with. And so if we just taught fundraisers, if we worked with someone like yourself and we said, show me a list. If I want to segment out anything, I want someone like yourself to show me qualitatively who are the donors, regardless of the size of the check that they can write, who are the donors that will actually sit at the lunch table with me. It's the qualitative, mm-hmm. It's the willingness on the part of the individual to say, yeah, I want to be in meaningful relationship with the organizations that I'm supporting. And regardless of what you're asking me to give, I'll have lunch with you.
Absolutely. You are absolutely right. You know, bringing those donor pools. And, you know, I want to add one more point here. When I have seen these development offices where there are like two or three staff members, and, you know, the conversations start with, you know, we are a small shop, so we need to really focus our energy where we can hit our goals. That's where it goes back to the conversation you and I were having, Jason, a couple of minutes ago on how to, you know, broaden those goals to empower them. But the point that I want to add here kind of is, if we can make these conversations more inclusive, if they are a small shop, I always encourage to bring in your volunteers. You know, right now we are in the perfect moment of COVID. I say perfect, you know, just to say, we are in the perfect moment of COVID where the whole world is relying on technology. The donors are willing to give you. They I know that it feels sometimes for organizations that, you know, they're losing donors or maybe, but the donors are really, my data suggests, donors are willing to give. They still have the affinity. They want to make a change. So the real question is, how do we not just engage donors through the fundraisers, but we also bring in volunteers? We could give them a portfolio. I always suggest my clients, if it's a long list, you know, and if I'm sitting with you to give you a donor pool, segmented in a way that you can give a couple of them to your volunteers to have them their own portfolios and, you know, bring in that, it becomes a holistic engagement from both ends.
Oh, that's just another episode. So when we work with clients, Mina, one of the things we talk about is their unwillingness to hand initiatives of the type that you're talking about to volunteers because they don't feel like they can control them, because they're not on the payroll, because they don't have the job description for mm-hmm. them in hand, and because they can't, quite frankly, they can't fire them, or they don't feel like they can quote unquote mm-hmm. fire them. They won't let them therefore do meaningful work. Cause I agree with you 100%. I think there's more volunteers out there that if we got their heads wrapped around how fundraising really works and we gave them responsibilities according to what I call, high capacity volunteer type work, they'd be mm-hmm. raising extraordinary amounts of money, but our organizations are run by a bunch of control freaks who won't surrender that. Right. I mean, They
you
can't.
Know, that's where, Jason, that's where your podcast and my writing, hopefully, to make a change.
Yeah, Mina, this has been a pleasure. I always get the pleasure of getting to go back and listen to this. I kind of know the tangents that I have gone off on, and I don't always get the pleasure of listening 110% to what everything you've said. So I look forward to listening to this again, and then we're going to get this on the air very quickly. But if there's somebody else who's listening and they want to reach out to you, perhaps a prospective client or somebody who wants to join into the conversation as you and I have had, how would you suggest that they do that?
I would suggest send me an email or send me a note on LinkedIn. I am very active on both the places and I'm reachable either way. Most often I'm going to follow up that request with a phone call, which I love to do because, you know, we have no place to go. So let's get on a phone call and let's meet each other and start having a good conversation. So an email or LinkedIn sounds just great.
Thank you, Mina. It has certainly been a pleasure. You're always welcome back. I look forward to talking again.
Likewise, Jason. Likewise, this has been a very invigorating, nice conversation to begin my day in the PFT time zone. So I feel very charged. I'm gonna hit my to-do list and get everything done by afternoon, I think.
Thank you. Bye bye.
All right. Bye.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.